This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Both times David Chin was here in the studio previously, he came in the context of conducting Johann Sebastian Bach, and in both instances, sacred music related to the composer. Not surprising then that he is here today still singing Bach, or more correctly, discussing this upcoming performance of the composer's Mass in B minor, and with him are two soloists, Rachel Kwok, a soprano from Hong Kong, and Mark Hosseini, a baritone from the United States. Well, welcome everyone. How are you today?
Terrific.
Well, thank you.
Lovely to have such lovely people in the studio today. So let's start with you, David. Welcome back. I understand you're in the last stages of your Doctorate of Musical Arts from the Eastman School of Music.
Yes, that's correct.
And so did you focus on Bach in your studies again?
Actually, no. That's the one thing that I did not focus on because my professor said that I've been doing so many Bach, so I should be doing some other works. So I conducted works by Mendelssohn, by Stravinsky, by Sir James Macmillan, but not Bach.
Okay, yes. And I see that I'm pronouncing it not as rightly as I should. Bach. Forgive me.
You're doing just fine.
But I mean, why did he demand such attention from you previously?
I think Bach is the first composer that really brought me into the true world of classical music. You know, I have been going to piano lessons since I was 9 or 10. But, you know, just week in and week out playing notes and rhythm. And that was enjoyable too. But when I discovered that, you know, how Bach was able to combine the elements of music and with his understanding of theology, just that too. And, you know, through forms and structures and through all sorts of musical elements and to express his own view on religions, his own view on even sometimes the society. I just found that to be very fascinating. So ever since then, it's like, you know, I only live so long. You know, we have a short life. So I should really focus on a great master if I want to learn something.
Something that's so inspiring to you as well. Yeah. And what about the both of you? I mean, do you share that same sort of, I suppose, interest in, I'm almost afraid to say it, Bach, as David does? Maybe we can start with you, Rachel.
Actually, no. Bach is quite wrote some challenging music to vocalists, especially for soprano, because his music is asking for agility, clarity, and a very deep understanding to it, because the text inside is all about Christianity. So for me, it's very challenging. But I start choral music with him, so I've come a long way in these 2 years because I started singing Bach's music 2 years ago.
Okay.
So it's kind of a milestone to me this time to be here. Yeah.
Lovely. And what about you, Mark?
Well, like Rachel, I also started singing Bach around 2 years ago, although I started singing individual arias or individual movements from some of the larger works. And I immediately fell in love with the beauty of melody, the beauty of counterpoint, the text painting, and also the challenging aspects of it for the singers. And I'm always up for a challenge, and it's been very rewarding getting to do that.
Well, we don't know much about the both of you, actually, so maybe you can tell me a bit about yourself, Rachel. You know, how did you get into music? I mean, what started that love of music for you?
I'm now studying in the Hong Kong Academy for Performing Arts, a major in opera and vocal studies. Actually, this is my second time to go back to the college because I got a degree in sociology like 5 or 6 years ago, and then I worked for like 2 or 3 years. And then I'm a Christian, and I found I have a calling in singing. So that's why I go back to school again and to find how much potential I can do with it. And now I'm here. So, yeah, many possibilities.
And what about you, Mark?
Well, I started as a pianist when I was very, very young. And well, when I was young, I was a hard kid to get to stick with things. I wasn't very athletic. But playing the piano was one thing that I had always loved doing, and I was able to stick with that. And then around when I was 12 or 13, I started singing in choir, and I realized that I loved singing, and I had a lot of people encouraging me to start studying privately and then encouraging me to take that forward from, and that was a encouragement from my family, from my colleagues, from teachers, then I realized I couldn't have a life without music, so then I started, you know, getting more and more into it, and then I eventually decided to major in college, and it's been a very rewarding journey, and I'm excited to see where it takes me.
And how did the three of you actually know each other? Is David the common factor?
Well, Mark is attending Eastman School of Music, so that's where we met.
Okay.
And Rachel, we met in Hong Kong because, you know, we started the Hong Kong Bach Festival 2 years ago, but I first conducted in Hong Kong in 2013, mm-hmm. and I think Rachel was there. She just told me I didn't even know she was in my concert in 2013, and so that we had some opportunities to collaborate and all that. So,
okay, so just going back to Bach, this is for all three of you, actually. To what extent is religious affinity, you know, of the performer requisite to an engagement with sacred music, you know? And when we say sacred music in this context, it's quite specifically, I suppose, Western in tradition and therefore Christian, and more particularly, I suppose, in the older established churches. So, you know, I mean, to what extent is a religious affinity a requisite? Mark?
Well, personally for me, my faith as a Christian has helped me very much in understanding sacred music, specifically, and specifically Bach and the Mass in B minor. And it's done that in that passages that I know from the Bible or other teachings that I had heard, I can help me understand what Bach was doing in the music. But I know that I've worked with people who are not Christians who know just as much about sacred music performance practice or what the composers were thinking, what their lives were like, and what they had intended for the music to be, and have very strong viewpoints and very, very strong opinions on how it's supposed to work, and can create a beautiful affect in the music, even though that they're not
of that faith.
Christians per se, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. I think you know, it's just like, are you, for example, the Bible? You know, is the Bible the Bible to you, or is just, you know, another piece of literature? I guess that's the difference, you know. How one goes about with sacred music. I've worked with, like Mark, I've worked with many non-Christian musicians who does very, very well with sacred music. And I have to say, sometimes even better than Christians themselves. So, which I think is a shame. But to me, I think as long as the message gets across in the music, I think that's the most important thing, because I think that's what Bach intended it to be, is for the message behind the music to get across to the audience.
And for me, if I explain what is sacred music to a music lover, I would say it's like pop music, country music. I don't know if I can categorize it like this, but it's about the content, because the text is about Bible, Christianity, so is how the musical world differentiates the differences between different kind of music. Mm-hmm. But for me, as a Christian musician, I think it's always a devotion, I would mean. Because when I'm singing, sacred music is all about text. It's all about my religion and my understanding to Christianity. So I will always go deeper with it. Yeah.
You know, for the audience, however, I know so many people who are not Christians that they enjoy music of Bach, because I think that is the genius of Bach. You can appreciate Bach from so many different levels. From a surface level, just the pure, beautiful musical sound, you can appreciate from that level. And then, you know, when you dig it deep down, you say, wow, you know, this is what he's trying to express. You know, this is repeating three times. You know, it represents the Trinity. Or, wow, this musical line is going up. You know, it is saying that, oh, Christ is going to heaven. Or, you know, this is a descending line. You know, it's talking about, you know, we're burying Christ and all that. So all this exciting thing. But then if you go even deeper down, I think there are many messages in the world, you know, whether it's from the Bible or even, you know, the teaching of Daozi or Confucius and all that. Not Daozi, Laozi or Confucius. I think they have this value that's very universal. Mm-hmm. I think whether you are Christian or non-Christian, there's always something in Bach's music for you. You know, whether it's aesthetically or philosophically. even physically. You know, when you listen, you get excited, or when you sing, you know, you just feel so excited. So I think Bach's music is for everyone.
Okay, yeah. It's a very universal in appeal.
It's very universal, so everyone should come to the concert.
and this reminds me when I was first time in a concert of Bach's music, I was firstly thinking, oh, it's so complicated because there are so many things happens together. But when I go deeper into it, I found, oh, there is some message behind them. And why repeat? Why the melody is being repeated by different parts? They're just a beauty of the music. So I think it's just come so you can learn how to appreciate it. And I think it takes time to digest it, to understand it. Yeah.
I'm speaking today to David Chin, Rachel Kwok, and Mark Hussaini. They're all involved in the Malaysia Bach Festival, and we'll find out a bit more after this quick break. You are listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, this is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today are David Chin, Rachel Kwok, and Mark Hussaini, and they're all involved in the Malaysia Bach Festival, and we are discussing the concert coming up, which is Bach's B minor Mass. So, David, as a conductor, how do you prepare to conduct this piece? You know, how much of Bach's life do you need to know, the circumstances of the composition, Bach's own religious conviction?
Well, first of all, I think my understanding for Bach, you know, accumulated over the years, so I'm very thankful that I have had been given opportunities, you know, in the past 5 or 6 years to, you know, learn about Bach and all that. So that's all set. But for concerts and productions such as this, you know, the 2.5 hours that you see on stage requires lots and lots of works of, you know, logistic planning. And, you know, like what my professor says, you know, in the States, and he said, you know, in conducting, 99% is not about conducting. It's about planning flight itineraries, planning
logistics,
you know, moving chairs, and, you know, and even the music itself is so complicated. So before you even have an opportunity to really dig into the music, I think as a conductor, you have to really plan, you know, how to use the rehearsal time effectively, because all the musicians are paid professional musicians. So, you know, they won't just stick around for you, you know. It's 3 hours per evening and the music itself is 2 hours. So how do you plan your rehearsal very effectively and, you know, move your rehearsal just as quickly as possible and get as much as possible out of them? So that is a big thing, you know, for us conductors to do.
And I understand this took you like almost a year already to put together?
Well, we started to plan this concert, I think, just about a year ago. How this concert came about, 2 years ago, we did Bach St. John Passion, and the Lutheran bishop happened to be at the reception. That was the first time I met with him, and I said, well, you know, 2 years later, we're going to have this 500th anniversary of the Reformation. We should do something. He's like, yeah, we should do something. That's how this concert came about. So a year ago, we started to plan, you know, we're going to do B minor Mass. And because a part of the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther's Reformation is actually a reconciliation with the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when the Reformation started, we always look at it as, you know, Martin Luther trying trying to go against the Catholic Church. But really what he was about was really to trying to get rid of all the corruptions in the church. Yeah. He was not trying to form a new church. So part of this anniversary, I think, around the world, Lutheran churches around the world, is trying to reconcile with the Catholic Church to find what is common among us instead of what separates us, what divides us. Yes.
So how do you think Bach's music actually carries the spirit of Reformation then?
Well, first of all, Bach is a Lutheran, and he came about 200 years after Martin Luther. The pinnacle of his career was in Leipzig. That's where he spent the last 20-something years of his life. And in a very small city, I think he admires Martin Luther a lot because he, in many of his church works and his cantatas, he would use Martin Luther's chorale tune to arrange, rearrange as his cantata. And I think theologically, you know, if you look at the Bible that Bach used to read, there's a lot of, you know, the margins are all full of his own writing and cross-references and all that. Bach himself is a very reformative composer, I would say. And with the B minor mass, people would say, you know, why would a Lutheran composer that lived 200 years after Martin Luther write a Catholic mass?
Yeah.
So this is the exact reason why we are doing the mass, is to bring out the message, the importance of the reconciliation and just the universal Catholic and Apostolic Church.
Okay, and is that the context of the composition of this mass? Was it a reconciliation?
Yes, if I may. How mass began, actually, it just began in the Bible when Jesus had the Last Supper with his disciple and they went out to sing a hymn. This is the beginning of mass, you know, where there's the distribution of the Holy Communion and then there's singing. And then the early churches, based on this idea, they started to have some sort of gathering of believers, which evolved into what Sunday services are today. So the content in the worship services, they are usually it can be divided into two parts. One is called a mass proper, which changes every week according to the church calendar. So, for example, if it's Easter, you read text on Easter. If it's Christmas, it's Christmas, you know. But there's also another part, it's called a Mass Ordinary, which doesn't change. Every day, 365 days a year, you attend a Mass, there's always this Mass Ordinary. So there's Kyrie, which is asking for the mercy. And then there's a Gloria, which is a praise. And then there's a Credo, which is the Creed. And then there's Sanctus, which is the Holy, Holy, Holy. And then there's the Agnus Dei, which is the Lamb of God. These five portion section of the Mass doesn't change. You can always find it in the Mass. All the texts of this Mass Ordinary, they became material for composers over the centuries as a material for musical composition. So if you are a great composer, you would definitely compose a Mass.
Okay.
So that's how it came about. So obviously, many people did it before Bach, and Bach himself, he did it too.
What has this piece in particular contributed to music? Because I understand much of the Mass gave new form to vocal music that Bach had composed throughout his career. So what new form did it give to vocal music?
Well, one large trait of the Baroque period is that we have the rise of opera. Now, Bach he never got to writing an opera because he was so tied up with his job in Leipzig.
Yeah.
But he did take many of the forms from opera and put them into his oratorios and passions and the Mass in B minor. So one, for example, is what we call a ternary form, or ABA, which is where you have opening section of music where you have one melody, a certain set of themes, and one key, and then you have a B section, which is in a different key, and then you have a different set of themes, and then in the end you return to the original theme, but with some embellishment, and that's a form that's all throughout this work.
It's still in pop music today. It's a verse, chorus, verse.
Yes.
That's what it is.
And coda.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you come hear us this weekend, you'll get to experience that.
Yeah. How formal is this piece of music? As in, is it in the strict following of what to follow because it is a mass and a ritual of the mass? Is it that kind of strict sort of, I suppose, arrangement?
Well, the text, definitely, you will get the full text of the Mass Ordinary. But what is so interesting about B minor Mass is, first of all, it's never performed in Bach's life.
Oh, okay.
Only part of it was performed. So we can talk a little bit about that later. You know, the first two movements was written because he wanted to apply for a job, okay? But speaking of the form, so why it makes B minor Mass one of the greatest pieces of music in the Western music history is that you see older style and newer styles within a work. You know, because Bach basically accumulates all the styles that he have written and he had learned that was available to him his entire life into this particular work. So what do we mean by older style? Older style is like the Renaissance style where you have a cappella choir. So in this case, he would double it with instrument, but instrument would play exactly what the singers are singing. So it sounds very Renaissance. It sounds like just like a sound mass is moving through the space. But then there's also the new style, which is what Mark just mentioned, the operatic style, where you have continual instruments. So the harpsichord, the organ, the cello, playing the bass line. And then you will have some solo instruments like the violin, like the flutes, like the oboe, playing a separate line that is different from what the singers are singing. This is the new style that was going on at the time, the operatic styles. So more soloistic as opposed to choral. Okay. So in this work, you get both. And then Bach also threw in some medieval chant, you know, in some of the movement. So you really get musical styles date all the way back to, I don't know, 400 to Bach's time, 1730, 1750.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And I mean, how strictly are you following the orchestration for this performance? Oh. You yourself, David.
Well, see, this is the thing. It's still up for debate. What were the performing forces for Bach's music? Some argue that his cantata, which is his church works, were written for one instrument and one singer per part, which means there's no chorus. Everyone is a soloist.
Amazing.
So that has been said. But then we also know that Bach's one of his most important responsibilities when he was in Leipzig is to teach at the St. Thomas School. And he has around 50 boys, you know, the document tells us. So all these 50 boys on Sundays, they will be distributed to four different churches. You know, the good ones will go sing and play at St. Thomas Church and St. Nicholas Church. And then those who are not so bright will go to the other two churches, which doesn't exist anymore. They do not exist anymore today. So then, you know, if you have 50 kids, if you kind of equally divide them, you know, to four, that doesn't give you that many performers. Mm. So in this performance, it's quite challenging for us. We don't do one on a part, but we only have about 3 to 4 singers per part,
okay,
which means everyone bears very strong responsibility. And for the string section, for our performance, is very small. We have 3 first violins, 3 second violins, 2 violas, 2 cellos, 1 double bass, and then the winds and the brass instruments, 1 each. So I think it is very close to, I think, what Bach would have liked.
Because I think there's 2 flutes, 2 oboes,
yeah,
3 natural trumpets. I'm not sure what a natural trumpet is, sorry. Timpani. I mean, do we have these sort of natural horns and trumpets in the country at the moment?
Well, that's a very good question. So usually nowadays, if you perform Bach's works, usually you will either perform it what we call on period instruments, which the tuning is actually slightly lower than our modern tuning, and or you would perform it in a modern instrument. You know, it is my dream that one day we could do the entire Bach's works on period instruments, but unfortunately we don't even have, I mean, even our harpsichord, unfortunately, is going to be a digital one, but we try to find the best digital harpsichord we can find in Malaysia to put into this performance. So we are using the modern instruments instead of the period instruments. You know, for example, modern instruments for violins, for the strings, cello, is the steel strings, you know.
Okay.
But if it was a period instrument, it would have been gut strings.
I see.
So the sound is very different. Yeah. But we will try to play it in a way that's very historically informed.
So I guess doing the best with what you have is...
Yes, that's what we have to do, right?
Yeah. Who are some of the other notable musicians in town that will be in the concert?
Yeah, most of our musicians for this particular concert are Malaysians, actually. And many of them, if not most of them, are currently music students, whether in a local university or they're studying abroad. So I think our average age for this performance, for this group, is 30.
Wow.
So you'll be seeing some of the youngest and brightest musicians of our country.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, our counter tenor solo is from Singapore, and then we have a tenor solo from Taiwan. So, but other than that, and Mark from USA and Rachel from Hong Kong, other than that, everyone else are from Malaysia.
How large is the choral group going to be? I think you're using some choirs from town as well, from around town?
That is it.
That is it. Okay.
All we have is 14 singers.
Okay.
And the soloist comes out. Then the soloist will also have to sing in a choir. Yeah.
Right.
As it was on Bach's day. We have 14 singers, mm-hmm. 4 sopranos, 4 altos, 3 tenors, 3 basses. And then we will have an orchestra, about 20 people. So all together, just around 40 people.
Nice number. Nice, yeah. Wonderful thing to see on stage as well. And how has it been for the both of you? You know, I mean, you can push the dirt on David. You know, what's he like as a conductor? How has he been torturing you on stage in rehearsals? How's it been for you, Mark?
I've really enjoyed rehearsing with this group. There are a lot of really, really fantastic musicians, really beautiful voices, and working with David's been very rewarding. He's very picky, but I like that. You know, he does everything he can to really bring out the core meaning of the text, mm-hmm. and bringing out the right lines that need to be brought out. And he's got a really strong opinion on how everything has to be phrased and all of that. And it's been challenging, but very rewarding. And I mm-hmm. think many of our colleagues would say the same.
Yeah, and I think it's quite ambition impossible, actually. I learned, yeah, because I spent a whole year to learn the notes and the style and the cultural thing of B minor mass, and we are going to put everything together in a week. So I'm so amazed that there is a group of people who would like to do the way like this, mm-hmm. and David is really amazing because he keeps bringing new ideas to us. So it's really rewarding, and I'm just like going to lecture for every rehearsal. Yeah, and very practical one.
Very, okay. It's been a real learning experience
right? Yeah, mm-hmm. So,
but I can't sing as well as you do.
So I'm so looking forward to it, yeah.
Okay, and you know, I guess what challenges did you face in this whole production, if at all?
Learning the B minor mass took longer than usually takes me to learn other works of music, mm-hmm. just because, I mean, in the choir parts, you have so many of polyphonic writing, which means you have different voices coming mm-hmm. in at different times. And as I'm learning my own part, I'm thinking, oh my word, this is so difficult. These intervals are so hard, and it just, yeah. I don't hear it. But then once you get it, once you listen to where it fits in with the other voice parts, or even in the orchestral parts, you realize, okay, every single note is really important as to how everything is moving through in this wall of sound that David mentioned earlier. So it was very challenging learning it, but once you understand what Bach was thinking when he wrote all these notes, then it gets to be a very rewarding musical experience, and your voice just sort of goes with it.
Yeah, and for me, it's quite challenging to deliver the message behind, because we are all singing in Latin, which is a dead language. That means nobody is going to use it at all. But it's quite challenging for me because I have to deliver the emotion, the meaning behind the text with my voice and with my partners, with my colleagues. So it's challenging, but I would like to take this challenge because that's why we are here. That's why we need music, because music is something that we can deliver, something behind text. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's nice to hear the struggles that go behind it, because people just think, oh, you know, you're talented singers, you just go and learn a piece and sing. Yeah. But they don't understand that you need to understand the history, the context, and, you know, how everything comes together, right? So mm-hmm.
I think many people just think that we can just stand up there and sing.
Yes.
And then we just enjoy our life, and then we'll be fed by God from heaven. And many people don't understand why, you know, you have to buy tickets to concert, because music is the art of time. That means you have to use time when you make music, you know. It requires a lot of times for us to put things like that together. And, you know, people have to give up their job for a week just to fly to Malaysia to do this project. I mean, how many private lessons they have to, you know, postpone or cancel. And those requires money, and it's a sacrifice for them to come. And then to be here for a week, all we ask is for people to buy a ticket that's under 100 ringgit, which is nothing in today's culture. And just to come and sit in a very comfortable room and enjoy the music that has been prepared for I don't know how many years, you know, these people have been investing their life into. So I have high hope in Malaysia's arts and culture. I think it's going to a wonderful place, and people understand more nowadays, you know, about arts and all that. So I think we have a bright future, but we need the support of the people, not just among musicians, but the public.
I think some people might be a bit uncomfortable maybe thinking that this is has religious undertones. But I mean, how would you, what would you say as a final message to everyone, why this is a very enjoyable evening for everybody?
Like I say earlier, Bach's music can be appreciated in so many different levels. You do not have to be a Christian to appreciate Bach's music. You definitely do not have to. Although there will be text projected so you understand what we are singing. But for people who share the same faith, then, you know, you will appreciate it in a different level. I definitely encourage everyone to come. You know, if you go for opera, you would never believe in the story, but you still go see the opera because it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
So same for B minor mass. Just come.
If this is the first time you go for Bach's music, that would be your only choice. That's it.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I just have to say to everyone, if you come this weekend, I really think you're going to have a really amazing musical experience. And I think you'll be, intellectually stimulating for you. I think it'll be emotionally rewarding. And I think that you will have a very spiritually edifying experience regardless of your faith and religious background. Mm-hmm. So please come.
And our musicians are some of the best musicians in Malaysia that you can find. So it's cream of the crops.
So Bach's B minor mass is a choral event which will be held at Word Auditorium Luther Center in Petaling Jaya, which is located on number 6 Jalan Utara. The event celebrates 500 years of the Reformation, and performances, as they mentioned, are on Saturday and Sunday, the 22nd and 23rd of July at 7:30 p.m. For ticketing information, you can visit Bach's B minor mass on Facebook. And thank you so much, all of you. It's been such an enlightening experience, pun unintended. I've been speaking to David Chin. He's a conductor and the artistic director of the Malaysian Bach Festival, among many others. And Rachel Kwok, she is a soprano, and Mark Hosseini, he's a baritone, and we've been discussing Bach's B minor mass. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.